What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm Burge. I'm back. Memorial Day weekend is coming. I can't wait to get away for a bit and unplug. But before we do that, we got an awesome episode in store for you tonight. As always, check us out on the social media platforms, X, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. We're at Tackles Pod there. Facebook, search Between the Tackles. You'll find us. Apple, Spotify for the podcast audio download. Like, subscribe, download. Give us a 5-star rating. Goes a long way to help us continue to grow this awesome platform we have here at Between the Tackles. I'm back with Manish Mehta. How are you doing today, sir?
I am doing great. I just want to get a little clarification. When you say unplug, are you not going to look at your phone over the weekend when you're...
Well, it depends. Do I have cell service where I am or do I not? I'm going on my first family camping trip, so there's a chance I may not have cell service. But I don't know what I'm going to do if that happens because I may pull my brains out because my kids are going to drive me nuts. But that's a story. That's a totally a story for another day. We'll give you the recap next episode on how strung out I was. But this week, we got an awesome episode. We're going to get into some of the recent NFL headlines since we last were behind the mics here. We also got some fun, bold predictions. I imagine we're going to disagree a little bit on these bold predictions. After the NFL schedule release came out last week. So we're going to give you our takes on that. And we're also going to give, records on where we think teams are going to fall. Very early record predictions for all 32 NFL teams. So without further ado, let's just get right into it. Right before we got on here to record this episode tonight, news dropped that the reigning NFL MVP, Matthew Stafford, signed a one-year, $55 million extension with the Los Angeles Rams. Look, I think this was obviously coming. I don't want to say I'm a little surprised by it, but, they did reach for Ty Simpson. We have our opinions on that pick in the draft, but it's clear that Matthew Stafford is part of the Rams' plan, for the next couple of years going forward while they're in this title window, as you would say.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty obvious by the level of play that we saw from Matthew Stafford last year that he really doesn't show any signs of slowing down. Now, the nagging offseason injuries seemingly every year aside, when the games actually begin, he's playing at such a high level. They were one game away from reaching their second Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford last season. And in that NFC Championship game loss to the Seattle Seahawks, if you remember, Stafford was lights out. Threw for nearly 375 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Was nearly flawless. So he's playing at a high level. It really does make the Ty Simpson draft pick that much more confounding in my mind because I always felt that Stafford had a couple good years left, great years, I should say, left. And clearly the Rams believe that he's going to be an instrumental part of their team through 2027 because it is a one-year extension. We have not found out the details of that one-year extension, but I imagine that there's no really easy escape hatch for the Rams after 2026. So you would think he'd be the starting quarterback at least through 2027. The number, as you said, is astronomical, $55 million extension. I believe with incentives, it can be pushed up to $60 million, which you could say, reset the market on some level at that position. But, he's an exceptional player. And if he can stay healthy, I don't see any signs of slowing down, even at his age. Was I surprised that they gave him the extension? Not really. I think I was more surprised that they were going kind of year by year these last few years with him instead of making a longer commitment. But he is a tremendous player. When we get into our records, I think my record for the Rams is going to reflect that Matthew Stafford is still playing at a very high level, and the Los Angeles Rams are going to be a team to reckon with again in 2026.
I think even with, the Rams drafting Ty Simpson, we've talked quite a bit on, around draft time about, is it beneficial for a player to sit for a couple of years behind a guy who's playing at a high level to learn? I think that you're seeing this situation play out right here with Simpson and Matthew Stafford. Could you argue the Rams are trying to replicate a Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre type situation with Ty Simpson, given the commitment that the Rams put into Simpson by taking him, you know, in the middle of the first round? You see that happening?
Yeah, perhaps. You know, I think that might be an outlier situation. It was really fascinating the year that the Packers drafted Love. Aaron Rodgers was motivated, ticked off, however you want to describe it, to such an extreme level that he won the MVP. So I think the Rams will take it if Matthew Stafford wins a second consecutive MVP. Typically, though, 1 year should suffice. You sit behind for 1 year, much like Patrick Mahomes did with Alex Smith, and then year two, the guy's ready to roll, because you do have to pay these quarterbacks. So sitting for a couple years like Love did, like Aaron Rodgers did before him, is unusual. And I'm not saying it can't work. I just, as we said after the draft, I just did not understand why the Rams, who are so close to getting to another Super Bowl and perhaps hoisting another Lombardi trophy with Matthew Stafford, why they would not have taken a player who can help out immediately, whether that's on offense to help Stafford specifically or on defense to help the team as a whole.
Well, you just mentioned one of the quarterbacks that's going to be impacted by this next headline, and that's you mentioned Patrick Mahomes, and one of his leading wide receivers here. I don't know what's going through this guy's head. I really don't. He clearly had some issues a couple of years ago with his court, you know, the car crash and everything. And that's Rashee Rice, you know, probation violation. He's locked up for 30 days in jail as a result, missing OTAs, missing offseason work for the Kansas City Chiefs. To me, this is just a boneheaded move. I mean, he tests positive for marijuana, for weed, and that's what's going to get him to miss a good portion of his offseason workouts with the Chiefs. As to echo Stephen A. Smith, like, stay off the weed. Come on. What are you doing? They don't listen, right? Right? I want to get your thoughts on this, Manish.
Yeah, I mean, he gets the knucklehead award of the season from a player's perspective. I think we know who got the ultimate knucklehead from a NFL perspective this offseason. We don't need to talk about the head coach of the New England Patriots right now, but you know, I don't understand what Rashee Rice is thinking. When you go back a couple years with that that crash on a highway, you could have killed somebody for one, and then you leave the scene or try to leave the scene in broad daylight, and then you have your teammates in the off season wearing Free Rice shirts, which I thought was idiotic and really patently ridiculous. And then I think he got a slap on the wrist from the NFL in terms of the amount of games he was suspended for. All that happens, and you're essentially in the clear if you can just adhere to the terms of your probation. And one of those terms is you can't smoke marijuana. And he just could not resist. Did he think he wasn't going to get caught? I don't really know. When someone makes such poor choices like he has, you never really know what is going through their mind. And to complicate matters from a football perspective, he just had surgery, so he's not going to be able to rehab and have physical therapy for the next 30 days because he's, you know, going to be behind bars. Just a series of poor decisions, and clearly an immature person who has not learned very much from a serious incident several years ago.
It's just crazy. Yeah, a week removed from surgery on the right knee, and now you got to go sit in a jail cell for 30 days. It just, the boneheadedness of some of these professional athletes and people associated with professional sports always dumbfounds me. I can't get it. You're getting the world handed to you for your, you know, God-given talent, and all you have to do is basically be a good person. Be a good person and stay out of trouble. And you know, for somebody like Rashee Rice, obviously that hasn't sunk in. You can tell I'm a little amped up about this because Rashee Rice is on my dynasty fantasy team, and this bothers me. I already withstood the eight game suspension he had last year. Now I got to withstand this kind of bogus news. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, to piggyback on what you just kind of talked about, Nolan Smith of the Philadelphia Eagles, speaking of knuckleheads, was just arrested for driving 135 miles an hour. And I don't know if it was a 65 or a 55, But 135 miles an hour, I was, you know, talking to a buddy of mine earlier today, and I said, I think my Honda Accord would explode if I tried to go 135 miles per hour. That's really scary stuff. And, you know, all joking aside, in the wake, or in light, I should say, of what happened with Henry Ruggs, the former first-round pick for the Las Vegas Raiders, and what has happened with Rashee Rice, you would think that some of these guys would, you know, get the point, get the message. You know, racing or driving at those ridiculous speeds is dangerous, not only to yourself, but perhaps more importantly, to innocent people around you. And it never ceases to amaze me how some of these players just don't get it. And I don't give them a pass because they're in their early 20s for the most part, or mid-20s for the most part. You know, these are adults. Say what you want, but the decision making is so puzzling to me because of the reasons that you outlined. They've got so much at their fingertips right now, mm-hmm. and essentially all you have to do is be a decent human being. You don't have to be the most forthcoming human being or generous human being, but just don't be a bad guy. And unfortunately, the NFL year after year has shown to have guys who are, for lack of a better term, bad guys. And I hate saying that because we're all complicated people and there's a lot of layers to all of us. But some of these decisions are just awful. And Nolan Smith, Rashee Rice, are clear examples of that.
It's the invincibility factor. These guys think they're invincible and nothing can touch them because they have everything that, has been, and I don't want to say handed to them, because they have worked hard to achieve getting to this level. It doesn't get handed to you, but you get my point. But let's move it along. Obviously, we have to touch on AJ Brown until this trade is finalized, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, so we can move on, like moving on from other stories that we're not going to talk about. AJ Brown, Adam Schefter came out still hard pressed to say that AJ Brown is going to be a Patriot. This part really grinds my gears. You see anything come out about AJ Brown reporting, not a report of hearing that AJ Brown's going to say to the Jaguars or the Chiefs or the Rams. It's these people, whether it's in social media or reports, putting up theories of where he could end up. And you got these Eagle fans that just run with it. Oh, we're going to get Brian Thomas a first and a second for AJ Brown. Like, okay. Dude, like, I can't even, I don't know why it triggers me. I should just ignore it, but it triggers me. It's like, dude, you're not going to get that. That's not going to happen. And I don't care if Howie Roseman's a great GM, it's not going to happen. So how do you feel about this, Manish?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious what's happening right now, as I view it. We're in, coming up on Memorial Day weekend, and, June 1st is that line in the sand where after the Eagles trade AJ Brown, and they will trade him, their cap hit for Brown gets spread over the next 2 years. So a lot of questions about whether this is going to get done with the Patriots on June 1st or June 2nd. We had Ian Rappaport on recently, and he said that there is no secret deal between the Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles, and Eagles fans are looking for maximum return, just like Howie Roseman is now, I believe, trying to recreate the market that he was looking for several months back, and there were no takers to accept the Patriots in terms of the price he wanted. Now, he wants a 2027 first-round pick that's been out there. I think Ian Rappaport also said that as well, but it doesn't seem like he's getting a clean 2027 first-round draft pick, so why not try to recreate the market by drumming up buzz through people in the media? Maybe the Jaguars, as you said, are interested. Clearly, the Jaguars are open to trading Brian Thomas. Now, I think Brian Thomas and a second-round pick would be a fair compensation package for the Eagles. I don't know if Howie Roseman feels that way. I don't know how Howie Roseman feels about Brian Thomas as a player. I'm just looking at this from the outside in. That, to me, seems like a fair deal. There's questions about the Chiefs now that Rashee Rice is in trouble, or unreliable, I should say. Could they perhaps be interested again? They were loosely interested several months back, and I wouldn't imagine that would happen. The Rams, who evidently came close to getting A.J. Brown, could they jump back into the mix? So this, to me, reeks of Howie Roseman trying to create a market so that he gets the value that he wants. Because I think he has a good understanding of what the Patriots are willing to offer, even though it's not a firm, even though it's not a quote-unquote done deal. And I agree with Adam Schefter. I do believe that when it's all said and done, A.J. Brown will be a New England Patriot. But there is no rush right now. Now, you don't want this to bleed into training camp in mid-July. You want this all to be taken care of. You don't need the distraction when players report asking questions about A.J. Brown, asking Jalen Hurts if you know, reporters, I guess, could ask him now during OTAs, why wasn't he at A.J. Brown's wedding recently, or questions of that nature. You don't need that when training camp begins. So A.J. Brown will not be a member of the Eagles when the Philadelphia Eagles open up training camp in mid-July. But as we stand now, it's late May. So there is a window of time here where Howie Roseman can, you know, drag this out, for lack of a better phrase, to see if another suitor steps up to the plate. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. But I think at the end of the day, you know, when week one of the 2027 or 2026 season rolls around, A.J. Brown will be playing for Mike Vrabel.
I think that is the case, too. As is, it, like you said, it reeks almost of posturing where they're just trying to really drive the price up. I mean, the Patriots also, as the team interested in A.J. Brown, don't want this bleeding further into the offseason. They want to get A.J. Brown in the room, learn the system, get accustomed to how the operation works and everything like that. So as a Patriots fan, no later than June 2nd do I want to see it reported that A.J. Brown is traded to the New England Patriots. So honestly, I want to be done talking about it big time. I'm sick of talking about it because there's no new news and we just keep speculating on it. But I'm ready to move on. So we'll see what shakes out. Another interesting headline, Manish, that came out here regarding some awards that were specifically an award that was delivered to a player. You want to touch base on that?
Yeah, Jackson Smith and Jigma, as every NFL fan knows, won the Offensive Player of the Year award. It was announced at the Players Banquet. I don't know what's it called, the NFL Honors, I guess is what it's called, during Super Bowl week, and he finally got his award. It's a plaque which should ostensibly say 2025 NFL Offensive Player of the Year. Unfortunately, it said NFL Defensive Player of the Year. So he was not happy about it. He took to social media, said it was disrespectful and that it was getting ridiculous. Now, you do have to trace that remark back to the NFL Honors event, because if you remember when he won the award, the presenters butchered his name, which to me is unfathomable. If you don't know how to pronounce his name, the NFL is right there to tell you before you go on stage, this is how you pronounce his name. Frankly, I blame the NFL because he does have an atypical name, so they probably should have gone through that with the presenter. So they butchered his name at the NFL Honors event. Then they said he got the Defensive Player of the Year award. What I thought as a writer, as a journalist, what I was, I think, more offended by was not the fact that it's a Defensive Player of the Year as opposed to Offensive Player of the Year, but there was no space between the word the and year. So it was one word, the year. I don't understand how the NFL makes a gaffe like that. This is an entity that's worth untold billions of dollars, an entity that will gouge the average customer for more and more money by putting games on paid streaming services. Meanwhile, they don't have standard proof checker or layer of vetting to make sure that the award actually is spelled correctly and for the correct player. This is baseline stuff, elementary stuff. And it's an embarrassment to the league. And I'm frankly ecstatic that JSN brought that to everyone's attention, because he didn't have to. Nobody would know it other than him. He could have quietly just called the league and say, hey, look, you screwed up. But he made it clear that the world knew, and I'm really happy about that.
It's the nerd in you that really was fried by the year.
I'm a grammar snob, and I think I've always been a grammar snob. I'm also a little bit old school because there's words that people use that aren't actually words, and then the Merriam-Webster usually caves and create words that weren't actually words, and now they actually are words. what burns me up specifically is the word conversate, which was not a word when I was growing up. The word is converse. When you're talking to somebody, you're conversing with them. People would say conversate, and so many people started saying that now I believe that actually is a word when you look up on dictionary.com, Webster's Dictionary. So I understand how language evolves over time. You know, Old English from the 16th, 17th, 1800s is much different than the way that we speak now. And I know that words evolve over time. So it shouldn't bother me, but it does bother me. And then when there's no space between two words and when there's incorrect punctuation, we could have a whole episode about that. That really annoys me.
Man, you would not like reading what I write on a formal basis. I am so inept when it comes to. I did pretty good on my papers in college, but I am just English is not my strong suit. I'm a math guy. 100% of the time, and yeah, but conversate would drive me nuts too because I'm in your camp. It's converse.
It's a word now, so it is conversate. So it's become part of the lexicon.
They'll still chat me if I hear somebody say that I'm conversating you or convert. I don't even know how to use the word for crying out loud. But let's get to our last headline, Manish. This is one that you wanted to get in here. So I'll let you have the floor and chat about it.
Yeah, there's two. One really quick. It's not an NFL related storyline. It's ESPN's NBA insider Shams Charania. Has been criticized over the last week or so for leaking who won the NBA MVP award. And it was SGA, if anybody cares. And I believe it was the Amazon TV crew composed of Steve Nash and others were critical of Shams for breaking the news instead of waiting for Amazon to announce the award. And, as a reporter, I thought that was laughable. Shams does not work for Amazon. He does not work for the NBA. He works for ESPN, and his job is when he gets information that he gets clearance to report, he should report it. And he did a great job in reporting that SGA won his second consecutive MVP, and former players on Amazon criticizing him really annoyed me, to be honest. And it shows us a fundamental lack of understanding of what an insider's job is, whether it's NBA, NFL. Again, many people might not care about that, but to me, when I saw that, I just thought that was ridiculous. We heard
Ian talk about it last week. Accurate. Like, be first.
Right. Accurate first. It's job. Of course, and it's news. If you don't think that who's winning the league MVP is news, then you don't know what you're talking about. It's clearly news. He's not beholden to the NBA TV partners. And for these former players who, frankly, have dealt with media their entire career, Steve Nash was even a coach after his playing days. So he understands media. For these guys to come out and criticize Shams, I just think it was Bush League and showed, again, just a lack of understanding of what this man's job is. And he does an incredible job doing it. So I applaud him for reporting it. I applaud him for, I don't want to say defending himself, but really explaining his position in a professional manner.
Absolutely.
The final topic that has been in the news this week, it's the NFL Accelerator Program that essentially helps develop a pipeline for young up-and-coming coaches and young up-and-coming executives who have designs on being a head coach and designs on being a general manager. I believe there were 16 coaches, 16 executives in the program. What that essentially helps these candidates do is facilitate a relationship with ownership and other NFL executives so that these guys get in front of owners, so owners know who they are. So when the next hiring cycle comes along, they might say, hey, I had a favorable interaction with this coach or this executive. I would like to interview them for my vacant position at some point down the road, because everybody's going to have an opening at some point down the road. And credit to the NFL for including Catherine Hickman, who's in the Cleveland Browns front office. I know that the NFL would love to have a female general manager at some point soon, and it seems like Catherine would be somebody that would be high on that list. But again, giving her the exposure to talk to other owners will be invaluable. What I take umbrage with is why two particular people on the coaching side were included in this program. And one is Mike McDaniel, which makes absolutely no sense. He just finished a four-year run as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Every owner knows who he is. We all know what his resume is. He does not need any additional help, whereas some of these younger coaches could use a spot in that accelerator program. It used to be minority specific. Now it does include people from diverse backgrounds, not enough diverse backgrounds in my estimation, but it does include people from diverse backgrounds. But now it does also include white candidates. And one guy who's on that list who absolutely deserves to be on that list is Josh McCown, who I have no doubt will be an NFL head coach at some point. He is the epitome of being a leader. So I'm glad that guys like him are part of the program. But Mike McDaniel makes no sense. The other candidate that I took exception with was Eric Bieniemy. He's back as the offensive coordinator with the Kansas City Chiefs. He had an opportunity several years back to interview for head coaching positions. He interviewed for, you know, a good amount of head coaching positions and did not get any offers. And my understanding has always been that Bieniemy has had, you know, some challenges in terms of organization, how he organizes himself, how he would organize an entire team. And that's a big hurdle to overcome. And I think that enough owners have had exposure to him that the league would have been better suited to have somebody else in his position. Those two guys just didn't make any sense. Bieniemy and McDaniel, honestly, McDaniel, that's laughable. And I'm a Mike McDaniel fan. I'm a huge Mike McDaniel fan. I think he's a brilliant offensive mind. I think he's going to do brilliant things with the Chargers and Justin Herbert this year, but he does not belong in this program. And I don't, for the life of me, understand why the league included him in.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more about Mike McDaniel and even Eric Bieniemy, who seemingly had opportunity after opportunity to make that leap, and it hasn't happened. So there has to be something, like you said, going on that, you know, is kind of more so behind the scenes than anything else. Mike McDaniel is definitely interesting because he was an offensive coordinator with the 49ers, had 4 years as a head coach, who had some pretty darn, he had some pretty explosive offenses in his time in the Miami, and immediately picked up to be an offensive coordinator again. So like there was no gap in his employment or anything like that. It's dumb. But let's wrap up this segment of the show, and let's move on to the fun portion. And that is, we got some bold schedule-related predictions to share with you. Expect some disagreement on these, just given our diverse backgrounds here. But Manish, I'll let you get your first bogus prediction out of the way here.
I like how you slid that in. That's very artful. My first bold prediction after the recent NFL schedule release is that the reigning AFC champion New England Patriots will go 0-4 September. That's an 0-3 start. Losses to the Seahawks, Steelers, and Jaguars. Now, they did play the Seahawks and Steelers last year. As you know, they lost to both of them. I actually think they're going to begin the season 0-4. They play the Bills in Week 4, but that's an October game. I think the schedule makers really didn't do New England that many favors by having such a front-loaded challenge. Now, you can say the Steelers are not going to be a challenge, and I could come back with this. If you're going to play the Steelers, you should probably play them later in the season because there's no guarantee that Aaron Rodgers is going to be healthy or if Aaron Rodgers is even going to be under center. But Week 2, he's going to be fresh. He's going to be motivated. A lot of buzz and juice around the reunion with Mike McCarthy. I think if you're playing the Steelers, you do not want to play them early in the year. And unfortunately for the Patriots, they're going to do so. Seattle Seahawks, we already saw what the Seahawks did to the Patriots in the Super Bowl, one of the worst performances in Super Bowl history by a team. New England had no answers for Seattle's defense. I cannot foresee that changing in Week 1. And the Jaguars are going to be a great test. Jaguars were a great story last year, much like the Patriots were. I have the New England starting off 0-3. It's going to be a tough start to the season for the Super Bowl runner-ups.
I could not disagree with this take.
Shocking.
More.
I'm shocked.
More. Now, do I think the Patriots are going to go 4-0 in this stretch of time? Absolutely not. I don't believe that's going to happen. The Steelers, and you know, I'm just going to transition into my first bold prediction because it's related to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Aaron Rodgers is not going to be under center for the Pittsburgh Steelers following their bye week in week 9. In fact, I have the Steelers going 2-6 to start the season. Based on their schedule, the only games I see them beating is their division foe, the Cleveland Browns. They play them twice in the first 8 weeks. That's who it's going to be. The Steelers are going to be falling apart, and the Aaron Rodgers farewell tour is going to end early. The Steelers do not owe Aaron Rodgers anything. He's only played a couple of seasons for them. He made them drag it out this offseason, with some uncertainty there. They don't owe him anything. So when the season goes south, as Nostradamus, self-proclaimed Nostradamus that I am, was 2-6 to start the season, you're going to see Will Howard under center for the rest of the season. I got some friends that are Steelers fans. Didn't even want this guy back under center in the locker room there. Would have rather have rolled with Will Howard to see where things go with him. I don't believe in the Steelers at all this year. I was not a believer in them last year either. They proved me a little wrong. You mentioned the matchup last year with the Patriots, a game that, we debated on this podcast kind of ad nauseum when we were breaking down the Patriots schedule, and a game that Pittsburgh, I wouldn't say won it. The Patriots lost that game with the amount of turnovers and fumbles that Ramondre Stevenson specifically had in that game. I don't foresee this being I'm not going to say it's not a tough game, because early in the season, we've talked, there are a lot of anomalies that occur early in the first month of the season, which is also why I believe that the Patriots are going to beat the Seahawks. But we'll get to that when we start talking about our division records and schedule breakdowns. Manish, I don't want to go back and forth on this anymore. Do you have any rebuttal to me on this before we move to your second bold prediction?
No, I think your point is a good one. If they do start off slow, it will be fascinating to see how Mike McCarthy and the Steelers handle Aaron Rodgers. Because if they are starting off as slow as you think that they are, then I think it would make a lot of sense for them to see what they have in Will Howard. He's an intriguing prospect. I'm sure that Mike McCarthy, who had Aaron Rodgers as a young player coming out of Cal, would love to get his hands on Howard to see if this guy actually can be a legitimate starting quarterback. I don't think that's their plan entering the season, but midway through the season, if things are really off the rails, I don't really see how it makes much sense to have Aaron Rodgers as your starting quarterback in the final, 6 weeks, 8 weeks of the season. So I'm with you there. If they get off to a slow start, I would anticipate a change. And it's unfortunate, because Aaron Rodgers has come out and said this is his final season. First ballot Hall of Famer, one of the 5 best quarterbacks I've ever seen in my life. It would be unfortunate if his career ended in that manner.
I don't see Pittsburgh even remotely contending for a division title there in that division. And I arguably don't see them having any opportunity to make the playoffs. So Manish, take us to number 2 for you.
Yeah, I am very confident in this one. So confident. I don't think I can put any money down on this, because it's such a specific bold prediction. But my second bold prediction is that the Arizona Cardinals and first-year coach Mike LaFleur will not win a game until 5 days before Christmas. They will start off 0-13. They have a week 14 bye, and then I believe their first win will be week 15 when they host the New York Jets on December 20th. I am this confident that this is going to be an abject train wreck in LaFleur's first season, which is fine for LaFleur because he's trying to build something. They've got Jeremiah Love at running back, and he's going to be around for the next handful of years. They have no quarterback. Jacoby Brissett is holding them hostage for some reason for more money. They drafted Carson Beck, I believe, right? He's not going to be the answer. This is going to be a terrible football team, a team that's going to lose week after week after week. And when you look at their schedule, they're not going to come up for air very much. And they're just a bad football team. And I remember when we had Ian Rappaport on recently, he actually believed that the Cardinals would be a surprise team that would sneak into the playoffs. And I don't quite understand that on any level, given that the NFC West, in my mind, is the most difficult division in football. They don't have the horses yet. They're going to be a very bad football team. And I'm giving them a win in week 15 against the Jets. It wouldn't even surprise me if they lost that. But for right now, I'm going to say it's going to be Christmas week before the Arizona Cardinals and Mike LaFleur gets their first win.
Leave it to Manish to roast one team and roast the New York Jets right after by being the first win for the Arizona Cardinals. I'm fall somewhere in the middle between you and Ian on this one. I do not believe that the Arizona Cardinals are a playoff team. I also do not believe they are like, what are we going to say, 2-15, 1-15, 1-16, based on your prediction here. I don't believe they're that either. I think they're going to fall somewhere in the middle. But I'm going to move on to my second bold prediction here, and I have the New Orleans Saints winning 3 games at the end of the season to win the NFC South this year. I really, you know, this was a team that I was really low on last year. At one point in the beginning of the season, we're making fun of them. And what do they do at the end of the season with Tyler Shuck there and Kellen Moore? They win 4 of their final 5 games in the end of the season, including playing a little bit of spoiler with beating the 2 teams that were in it at the end, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Carolina Panthers, to kind of have an impact on the NFC South playoff picture. You know, I have them doing that. Jordan Tyson's going to be a beast for them the minute he was drafted by the Saints. I love that pick. I'll be targeting him in fantasy football this year. I think he is a strong contender and will win Offensive Rookie of the Year when it's all said and done. We'll talk about those awards in another later episode. But yeah, I like what the Saints do to build off kind of that late season kind of surge at the end of the next season and take it forward into this with the additions of Travis Etienne and Jordan Tyson and the pieces that they put in there.
Yeah, and look, the Saints have the second easiest strength of schedule when using the Vegas projected win total for opponents, which is what I use. I think it's a more accurate metric than the opponent's win percentage from last year, because Vegas win total projections take into account free agency additions and losses and draft additions. So it's a much more updated and accurate way of viewing strength of schedule. And when you look at it through that prism, only the Detroit Lions have an easier strength of schedule than the Saints. So the opportunity is going to be there. As you said, we'll talk about awards later down the road, but I agree with you that Jordan Tyson is going to make a big impact. And if Tyler Shuck is the real deal, I could see them winning a division that is seemingly up for grabs every single year.
Absolutely. That's exactly why I feel that way. You know, it's one of the easier divisions in the league. So I put a lot of faith in Kellen Moore this year to get that to build off of last season. Manish, give us your third and final bold prediction here.
Yeah, I'm going to cheat here a little bit, and it's a 2-for-1 special, New York edition, New York Giants and the New York Jets. I'll start with the Giants. I'm bullish on the New York Giants. I think that when they enter their Week 8 bye, the Giants will be in first place in the NFC East. I think there are 5 winnable games out of their first 7. And when I say winnable, that doesn't mean they're playing terrible teams. These are some challenges here. And Cowboys and Rams, the Commanders, who look like they'll bounce back to some degree. There's also some layups in there, but I just think that everything you hear coming out of New York with John Harbaugh and their new offensive coordinator, Matt Nagy, new defensive coordinator, Denard Wilson, just screams improvement to me. And I have been a big believer in John Harbaugh for a very long time. Now, I do think that they're going to run out of steam. I don't believe the Giants will win the division, but the bold prediction is that when they enter their Week 8 bye, they will be 5-2 and atop the NFC East. And on the other side, in the AFC, the New York Jets, my bold prediction is that Geno Smith is going to have an unsettling case of deja vu. He is going to be benched down the stretch, much like he was with the Las Vegas Raiders, paving the way for the Raiders to have the number 1 overall pick and selecting Fernando Mendoza. This time, I think that after the Jets' Week 13 bye, Geno will be benched for Clemson rookie quarterback Cade Klubnik. I think that Aaron Glenn will want to see Cade Klubnik and see what they have in him. I don't believe he'll be a long-term answer, but he could be a long-term backup. And I guess I should backtrack a little bit. I don't even know if Aaron Glenn's going to be making this decision, because I don't know if Aaron Glenn's going to be the head coach after the Week 13 bye. It could be interim coach Frank Reich, but that's not my bold prediction. My bold prediction is that Clay Kubnik, over the final month of the season, will be the Jets' starting quarterback, because the Jets will not be anywhere close to contention. And it, much like we talked about Aaron Rodgers, it makes no sense for Geno Smith to be the quarterback in December and early January at this ride out the regular season if the Jets are not in the mix.
I totally agree with that. I think both of those predictions very well could come true. I'm a little bit less bullish on the Giants than you are, but I think it's absolutely quite possible. My final bold prediction here, the Minnesota Vikings. The Minnesota Vikings are going to wrap up the season in similar fashion to the New Orleans Saints, and they're going to fire off four straight wins at the end of the season in December to, lock up a wild card and return to the playoffs after a dreadful season last year, where I think a lot of us thought, you know, with the NFC North being one of the most competitive divisions in the league, I think a lot of people expected Minnesota to be up there and not Chicago last year. Kevin O'Connell has got himself a new quarterback and Kyler Murray. J.J. McCarthy's still kind of a wild card as to what's going to be. I have Kyler Murray basically starting all season next year. He's going to be effective enough, and Kevin O'Connell's going to get the most out of his talent, up there in Minnesota with, you know, Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson. I expect them to return to the playoffs and to be a really hot team, going into the stretch of the season. I have the NFC North this year. We'll talk about it in a minute, but as one of the, if not the most competitive division in the league this year.
And if it doesn't unfold that way, then Kyler Murray should win Comeback Player of the Year. If he's going to lead the Vikings back to the playoffs and play the entire season, you would imagine that with the weapons that he has, that he's going to put up some good numbers as well. It's a fascinating division on a number of different fronts. I know we'll get into it when you talk about it, but, I'm not going to bet against Kevin O'Connell. As I think anyone who listens to the podcast knows, I'm a big Kevin O'Connell fan. I think he's one of the top five coaches in the NFL and has done a great job with everyone except J.J. McCarthy. It seems like he can resurrect quarterbacks other than J.J. McCarthy, so perhaps he can do the same with Kyler Murray that he did with Sam Darnold.
Let's start talking some predictions and records and where the divisions are going to line up this year. Manish, let's start us off with the AFC North.
Yeah, look, I think one of the common threads in everything that I discuss about the divisions that we're going to talk about is rest. How important is rest? Is it a real factor? The vice president of scheduling for the NFL, Mike North, has come out this week and said that the league doesn't really care about rest. They don't see any kind of market advantage or disadvantage. And I wholeheartedly disagree with that. I think it's actually patently ridiculous to suggest that rest is not a real factor and a cumulative factor for teams as the season goes along. And there's one of the guys who does an incredible job diving into this is Warren Sharp of Sharp Football Analysis. I would urge you to go and check out his work on his website. He really, I think, pinpoints important elements of why rest matters. And in this 2026 season, what I thought was fascinating is that 40% of the games, that's 110 out of 270 games, will include a rest advantage for one team over another. Perhaps even more remarkably, 25% of the regular season games this year will feature games in which one team had at least three more days of rest than the opponent. And that's the most of any season in NFL history. And so I think rest matters. And so that's going to be a theme when I talk about these divisions and these games. And as we start with the AFC North, the Bengals, who have missed the playoffs the last three seasons, largely because of health issues for Joe Burrow, I believe that they will return to the playoffs. They were 6-11 last year. I have them going 12-5 this year. What I think is fascinating about their schedule is that with all the star power they have on offense, Burrow, Chase, their other receivers and running backs, they have seven consecutive 1 o'clock games to start the season. Their eighth game is a standalone game, their first standalone game, but it's at 9:30 in the morning. It's against, I believe, the Falcons in Madrid. So it's a primetime game in Spain, but on the East Coast, I believe it's a 9:30 start. They don't play their first true primetime game until week 10 against the Steelers, and that's followed by a Monday night game in week 11 against the Commanders. I think the league missed a golden opportunity to feature Joe Burrow in an explosive offense by not having them essentially in a standalone position for the first 2 months of the season. I don't really understand how that makes any sense on any level. But what the Bengals Bengals have going for them, they have no games on the road on short rest, and they have the third easiest strength of schedule when you use Vegas projected win totals for opponents. So it's right there for the taking. I think this is the year they take advantage. I believe the Ravens, who missed the playoffs last year because of a missed field goal in the final game of the season against the Steelers, I believe they'll return to the playoffs. They'll finish second in the division at 11-6. I'm with you, the Steelers, who did win did make the playoffs last year. I don't believe that they'll make the playoffs with Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. I have them going 7-10. The Browns, for a second consecutive year, or maybe even be longer, are going to finish in the basement. They were 5-12 last season. It's Todd Monken's first year. I have them slightly improving at 6-11.
All right. Well, I'm going to take you were nice enough when we're doing this exercise here to give me the AFC East, and you know, we've been pretty active in our text chain about where I feel the AFC East is going to end up this year. I obviously have New England in first place, repeating as divisional winners. 11-6 will be their record, so they will take a step back off their easy schedule from last year. And they'll be 11-6. Look, I like what the Patriots have done this offseason. I'm, you know, making this prediction with the anticipation that AJ Brown will be a member of the Patriots offense. Drake May will continue his development, continue to grow in year three. I fully believe that this team is not going to take as massive of a step back as everybody thinks that they're going to take. Buffalo, I have them coming in second as a wild card playoff team at 10-7. Look, the Patriots and the Bills, you know, the first place, second place schedule has been talked about so much between these two teams over the course of the last two seasons. And I make a really good argument that the Bills got a tougher schedule based on the first, second place, opponents in that, where the Buffalo Bills end up having to go to Houston, which has been an absolute house of horrors for Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills during his time there. And they got to go to Los Angeles to play the Rams, who I'd rather play the Seahawks over the Rams. The Rams, I think, are going to be a Super Bowl, might be my Super Bowl pick when the time comes there. So that's where I have them. I have the New York Jets finishing 4-13 in third place in the division. Look, we've kind of talked about, you know, ragged on them a little bit. They're clearly going through a transition. They traded a bunch of their star players last year. So, and I have absolutely no faith in Geno Smith to do absolutely anything. But I have absolutely less faith in the Miami Dolphins, who also had a fire sale and decided to give Malik Willis, a guy with, you know, a handful of career starts, a buttload of money to come play quarterback for them down in Miami. I have them finishing the season out at 3-14.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I want to dive into the Bills, you know, your favorite topic, the Bills. They have a 14-day net rest advantage. Only the Bears have a better net rest advantage over the season. That's 15 days. But when you look a little bit closer at the Bills, they have two absolutely brutal stretches in terms of number of games and days. They have three games in 15 days between weeks 4-6 in October, Pats, Rams, and Raiders. You would assume that they would stay on the West Coast because they're at the Raiders right after playing in Los Angeles. It makes no sense, obviously, to go back and forth. And their second brutal stretch, if that wasn't bad enough, three games in 15 days, they have a second brutal stretch, weeks 9-12, four games in 18 days in November. So I'm not sure the schedule makers did this team any favors. Now, the net rest advantage for the season is massive, but when you look a little bit closer, playing three games in 15 days in October, and then in November, four games in 18 days, that's tough on anybody. I would say that I wouldn't wish that on you know, the team I hate the most, but I don't think you'll share that sentiment. You're probably pretty happy about that. But when you look at Pats and Bills, because it's going to come down to Pats and Bills in the division, right? Their first game is week 4, identical rest. Nobody has an advantage. The Bills are coming off a mini bye in their second matchup in week 13 in New England. So there's a slight advantage there. And this is a stat I think that you'll definitely appreciate. And by appreciate, you'll probably marginalize it, say it's not important. But it's since 2020, the last handful of seasons, Buffalo Bills have the best record in the NFL when they are not at a rest disadvantage. So when they're not coming off of short weeks playing teams with full rest, they have the best record in the NFL, which tells me they're a really good team. And sometimes as the season wears on, if you're playing on 5 days rest and your opponent's playing on 7 or coming off a bye, 13 or whatever it might be, they clearly aren't as sharp as they, they are when it's a fair fight. And that's how I look at it. Identical rest to me means it's a fair fight. And in those scenarios, and since 2020, nobody has a better record than the Buffalo Bills.
See, for me, I don't have, when you start talking about net rest and everything, obviously I haven't looked at, I didn't consider that when I was building my predictions here. Now I'm not going to sit here and say it does not have an impact, because it does, right? Your body's, especially late in the season, your body wears down. It absolutely has an impact. But I'm not sure that I go to the level where you're at, where it's like a massive advantage. Obviously, you just threw a stat at me that kind of indicates that is a big deal. I guess I might have more of an old school take at it. These guys are professional athletes, right? They train for this. And, there is such thing as the rust factor, and it may not apply to football as much as it applies to some of the other professional sports, but rust and being too rested, it's such a personal opinion, can play to be a disadvantage, in my opinion.
Well, if you're playing every game off a team off a bye, but any kind of disadvantage could be something as simple as the team you're playing has a mini bye, so it's an extra 3 days. I don't think you're going to get rusty because you're have an extra 3 days rest. In fact,
that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, talking to every player that I can recall about rest over the last decade and a half, no player has told me that it wouldn't be welcomed, especially as you get into October. You're relatively fresh for September, but then once you get past that first month or so, your body, depending on the position, of course, and your age, the body really does feel it. And mm-hmm. every day, even one day, I've had players tell me that they absolutely cannot stand Thursday night games because their bodies are on a specific timeline. And on Thursday of a regular week, they're still kind of starting to feel a little bit better so that by Sunday kickoff, they're ready to go. So to have your body ready to play on a Thursday night is an annoyance for these players, not because they're just, creatures of habit, but because their bodies are telling them, I am not ready. Mm-hmm. I am not ready yet. So I think it's significant. I've always thought it was significant. I thought the data suggests that it's significant. There's nothing that I don't think that can be done about that, because you can't have an equitable schedule for 32 teams. If you did, this season would probably be 10 months long. So that's just not practical. But I do think that it's a real factor, an important factor that the NFL just dismisses because, again, they can't make it equitable for every team. And just because they're dismissing it doesn't mean that it's not real. They just can't explain quantifiably what is the impact. But I think the reality is that there is a real impact. So let's move it on to the AFC West. One of my favorite teams, I touched on them earlier when ripping their offensive coordinator, Mike McDaniel. I think McDaniel's going to do a great job and lead Justin Herbert to the next level. That's why I have the Chargers, who finished 11-6 last season, with their season ending in an embarrassing loss in New England. I have them winning the division at 13-4. It's an ambitious record for a number of reasons. I think first and foremost, going back to rest, they have a net minus 24-day rest disadvantage. That is the worst of any team in the NFL since 2013, and the fourth worst since 1990, 36 years. these guys are going to be playing with less rest than virtually, you know, every opponent this season. It's not every opponent. It's actually only seven games where they have a rest disadvantage. But the schedule makers absolutely did them dirty, I think. Because it's one thing to have a rest disadvantage, but to this degree is absolutely ridiculous. They're playing four teams that are coming off bye weeks. That is absurd. I mean, that is absolutely absurd. The league really could have done something better about that. And in addition to the four teams coming off bye weeks, they're playing two, you know, division contending teams in Buffalo and the Ravens coming off of mini bye weeks. So essentially half their schedule is operating from behind. All that being said, I'm such a believer in Justin Herbert and Mike McDaniel that I think they're going to overcome it. I think they're just too good. The marriage makes too much sense, and the league can do whatever they want. The league threw them a bone by giving them the Arizona Cardinals and the Raiders in the first 2 weeks. Those are two blowout wins. They'll be 2-0. But from that point on, week three on, they have the toughest schedule in the NFL. So it's not going to be easy, but I'm that much a believer in the play caller and the quarterback to say that they can overcome that. We can look back on this, like, you know, 4 months from now, and it could all come crashing down. So I'm just saying,
I hope it does.
I think they will overcome these deficits in the schedule. It's a great division, a fascinating division. The Broncos won it last year at 14-3. I believe the Broncos will finish second this year at a respectable 10-7. The Chiefs, to me, are going to miss the playoffs for a second consecutive year. They've got six primetime games. I do not understand what the schedule makers were thinking, because they will not be a playoff team. I think they will finish under 500, 8-9. It's really a retooling phase for them. You know, forget about Rashee Rice. Even if Rashee Rice wasn't a knucklehead and was playing, I don't think they have the horses. Patrick Mahomes supposedly will be ready for training camp. I think what you're going to see from Patrick Mahomes, unfortunately for Chiefs fans this year, is that it takes a year to be confident in that knee, and the running dimension that Patrick Mahomes has had in his career has been fascinating, because he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he always had this tendency to run for a first down when they needed it on 3rd and 6 or 3rd and 8, when he least expected it. I think that part of his game will not be a part of the equation coming off his knee injury, so he will be a lesser version of himself in my estimation. The Raiders last place last year with only 3 wins. I think they'll up it up a little bit, 5 wins, but ultimately they're not going to climb out of the cellar in what I think is an exceedingly difficult AFC West.
Just interesting. We talk about the rest, and then the Chargers are so disadvantaged that they're the leaders of the division.
I think that speaks to – it's my personal opinion. That just speaks to Justin Herbert's greatness in my mind. I'm a massive Justin Herbert believer, and I was very disappointed in him laying an egg in Foxborough. I give the Patriots defense all the credit in the world. But this guy's got a real offensive coordinator now, a legit offensive coordinator. There are no more excuses for Justin Herbert. I will jump off the bandwagon and criticize him if he does not have the best season of his career. It may not manifest itself statistically, but you're going to see the best version of Justin Herbert with Mike McDaniel.
Be interesting to see. I'm going to move on to the AFC out. Wow. What was that? And the AFC South to round out the AFC here in our talk here. I'm just going to go right down the list here. I got Jacksonville winning the division at 12-5. They were a surprise team last year. They're not going to surprise anybody this year. You know, I think Trevor Lawrence finally has figured something out with Liam Coen, and I like them to continue that. I have the Houston Texans at 10-7. Making the playoffs in a wild card slot. Look, nobody's a bigger believer in the Houston Texans defense than me. I loved watching them. Probably my favorite defensive unit in the league. Maybe it's just because I watched CJ Stroud melt in Foxborough that, like, I don't see him coming back to allow them to be able to kind of take another step forward. At least in terms of his development, I think he is what he is at this point, and I just don't have faith in him. So I got Houston in second place at 10-7. Indianapolis have them at a very respectable 9-8, missing the playoffs. You know, Daniel Jones coming off those big injuries. Jonathan Taylor's a year older. They lost Michael Pittman. They gave a buttload of money to Alec Pierce. I just see them taking a step back. They're not going to catch anybody by surprise this year with what they're trying to do with Daniel Jones and that offense there that was so electric before the injuries came into play. And in the basement, I have Tennessee at 6-11. This was a tough one because I like to think that Cam Ward is going to take a step forward this year with the new coaching staff and working with Brian Daboll. I just don't think it's going to be there just yet. It might be a year away from seeing that happen there. So there's the AFC. Wow, why can't I say that tonight? I can't say it. The AFC South. There we go. Manish, take us into the NFC. Unless you got anything to add there. The NFC,
I agree with you. Jacksonville, it's going to be great to see the Trevor Lawrence, A.J. Brown connection. I think they're going to be in first place as well.
There you go. Okay. All right.
NFC, let's go to the NFC East. The Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? I have them finishing at 11-6, winning the division. They do have the fourth toughest strength of schedule based on Vegas opponent win totals. So it's not going to be an easy road. The NFL clearly is in love with the Dallas Cowboys. They have six primetime games. I think you're going to see an electric offense and a much improved defense. I thought that Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones did an incredible job this offseason to improve that side of the ball. I'm a big believer in the Dallas Cowboys, and it pains me to say as a lifelong Eagles fan, but I do believe the Cowboys are the best team in that division. The New York Giants, as I said, will be leading the division when they get into their week 8 bye. I think ultimately they finish second. Coming off a 4-win season, I think they're going to finish 10-7. Jaxson Dart's going to stay healthy, and if he does stay healthy, you're going to see dynamic play out of him playing with Matt Nagy. And then the Eagles, the reigning division champions, they have five primetime games. The schedule makers also did not do them any favors. They have four games against teams coming off a full bye. Sean Mannion is their new offensive coordinator. He has come out and said this week that his offense will be a blend of the West Coast principles that he learned with the Green Bay Packers and what the Eagles already do well on offense. I just do not believe that Jalen Hurts will adapt to this style of offense at a high level. And that's why ultimately I have them finishing in 9-8 and just missing the playoffs. I know that Eagle fans will not be happy to hear that, but I just am not a believer in this quarterback. And if they're going to play the style of offense that Sean Mannion wants them to play, the West Coast offense, I don't think that Jalen Hurts will be able to excel. And then coming and pulling up the rear, the Commanders, they won five games last year. New offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury is gone. I think they slightly improved. Jaden Daniels will be healthier for longer. But ultimately, I think they finish at 6-10 and round out the NFC East.
I think the NFC East is going to be a fascinating watch this year to see what happens. Like, you know, we get the upstart New York Giants. I think that that's going to be – it's just going to be a fascinating to see how that actually plays out, you know, at the end of the season in a few months when we start talking about it. Let's move to the NFC North. This is again, this is a division last year we were talking about them, probably one of, if not the best division in the league. I expect it to be that next season. And these records are going to reflect it that I'm going to give you. You know, I have both the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers sitting at 11-6 when the season is done. I have, you know, the Chicago Bears winning the tiebreaker and winning the division with Green Bay sliding in as a wild card. And, you know, to round out the bottom of the division, I have Minnesota and Detroit both sitting at 10-7. So I think that this is going to be a very competitive division. It would not surprise me at all if three of these teams make the playoffs next year. If not, wild scenario, all four of them sneak in. I don't know if you ever seen that happen, but
I'm pretty bullish on
this division. The Chicago Bears with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams, I expect them to just continue where they left off last season. Kind of a little bit of a Cinderella run into the playoffs there. It fell just short at the end. Green Bay is always going to be a threat, you know, as long as, you know, Matt LaFleur is there and Jordan Love and the talent that they have up there. Micah Parsons is going to be healthy this season. That's where I sit with this division. It's hard for me to pick a winner. I think these divisional matchups are going to be coin flips. You know, I mean, I don't know where your rest factors, if you did any research on the rest factors for this division at all, where that flips in, but that could definitely play a part in who comes out on top.
The Bears have the largest net rest advantage in the NFL, plus 15 games. They also have 5 games of a rest advantage of their opponent. What I think is fascinating is that some of these key games with really good teams, Seattle in Week 8, Jacksonville in Week 13, and the Lions in Week 17, to round things off, the Bears have at least a 3-day rest advantage in each of those games. So rest is not going to be an issue. The league has given them 5 primetime games. They think they're going to be a factor. I believe that Caleb Williams is going to continue to grow in Ben Johnson's offense, and I think they're going to win the division. I agree with you there. Clearly, the NFL is in love with the Packers as well because they actually have more primetime games than the Bears. They have 6. The Lions, to me, are probably the most fascinating team in this division because they have the easiest strength of schedule in the NFL when you factor in opponents' projected win totals. And they still have a lot of talent, so let's not sleep on the Detroit Lions.
Absolutely. Take us to the NFC West, Manish.
Well, look, last year we saw 3 playoff teams with at least 12 wins in the regular season. It's no coincidence that all 3 of those teams, the Rams, 49ers, and Seahawks, were top 5 in rest advantage last season. So that's a case for why rest actually matters. I believe the Rams will win the division this year at 13-4. They do have the 5th toughest strength of schedule, so that is something to consider. That being said, the NFL has them in a league-high 7 primetime games, so they believe there's going to be a lot of entertaining football coming out of them, and I tend to agree with the NFL. The 49ers, to me, a team that was decimated last year by injuries, but still won a road playoff game, is ripe for a bounce back. And I still think they're going to finish at 12-5. They were 12-5 a year ago, but it's going to be a very different 12-5. They have 5 primetime games. I don't think you're going to see the rash of injuries to key players that you saw a year ago. My biggest question with them is whether Christian McCaffrey can duplicate what he did last year. Because remember, he was plagued by injury the previous year and a half, and then he just kind of picked up where he left off last year. Can he do that again? If so, the 49ers are going to be a dangerous team, regardless of whether they win the division or not. They're going to be a dangerous team when the playoffs roll around. I'm giving the reigning Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks a 3rd-place finish in the NFC West. They were 14-3 last year. I think they're going to take a slight step back at 12-5. I do believe that their defense is going to be every bit as good as it was last year. You do have to, you know, fairly question whether Sam Darnold can duplicate the success that he had a year ago. They're also missing Kenneth Walker. Now, I know they replaced him, but Kenneth Walker was the Super Bowl MVP, so that does matter. And then the Cardinals. You know, we talked about the Cardinals. I think they won't win until Christmas week. I think ultimately they'll finish 2-15. Have the best record. I guess, depending on your perspective, it is the best record because they're going to have the number 1 overall pick and their choice of their franchise quarterback next year.
All right. Final division. Might be least one of the weaker divisions in the NFL, and that's the NFC South. Talked a little bit about this division in my bold prediction with the New Orleans Saints. Like I said there, I have them ripping off some wins at the end of the season to finish 9-8 and win the NFC South, beating out a tiebreaker with Atlanta, who I also have at 9-8. Carolina and Tampa Bay, keep pounding was our motto going into the playoffs last year. And I think that's going to kind of run its course for me this season. I'm not really bullish on them taking a step forward. Despite how Bryce Young played, last season to get the Panthers to the playoffs, I don't see another step coming forward. He's proven a lot of people wrong. I've been known to be wrong on multiple different occasions, so I could be wrong when talking about Bryce Young. But I have them finishing in 3rd place out of the playoffs at 8-9. And I also have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, with that big start at the end of the year. At the beginning of the year last year, kind of crashing down. I have them finishing also 8-9. And this was a fun exercise as we're closing out the predictions. This was a fun exercise as I went through and I did these records. I made sure that my records were accurate across the four divisions that I did. So if I gave the Falcons or the Pittsburgh Steelers, however it worked, a team a win, I made sure to give it on the other side a loss. And this is what I came up with. It was fascinating doing it at the end because there was a couple of teams where it was just like, oh, there's only two games left to fill out. Here we go. I'm not really bullish. And this division is going to come down to the last couple of weeks of the season, kind of like how it did last year.
Yeah, that seems like it happens every single year, right? Mm-hmm. I'm in agreement with the Panthers. It was a nice run last year. They made some, I think, good additions in the offseason. They do, however, have the third toughest strength of schedule. So I think they're going to be under 500 as well. Doesn't mean that they can't make some improvement, but from a record perspective, I think it's going to be status quo.
Yeah, that'll wrap up the bold predictions here. Like I said, Manish, this was a fun exercise. I think we should do this again once we get a little closer to the season because we should flip which divisions we do and see where it shakes out. And you can do the AFC East and bash my Patriots.
Yeah, it's always fun because when training camp begins, you get buzz on certain players. Injuries unfortunately happen, so that could turn the tide in terms of who you think will be good. You lose a quarterback and then everything goes out the window. So yeah, much different, I think, when injuries occur in the summertime. Hopefully not many do, but it's a different story altogether. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I like diving deep into the schedule. I think we should probably revisit this after the season to see how accurate we actually were. The bold predictions are called bold for a reason. So they're not necessarily going to happen, but if they do, you can brag about it, for months on end. But that'll do it for us. That'll be it for this episode. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button, leave a 5-star rating, write a review. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, wherever you get your podcast. You can find us on TikTok and Instagram at TacklesPod as well. And by the way, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, Between the Tackles. And comment. Your feedback goes a long way to helping us continue to grow. For Burge, I'm Manish. We'll see you next time.